we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a classified ad from the Devizes and Marlborough News, read by Harriet Cass.
Coffin for sale, slightly used, £155.
Thanks to Ruth Wainwright for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome, first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Dave Gorman. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, traditional easy question. Whose watchful decision caused a Hoonan cry this week?
This is a military story. It's all about the big push for Fallujah. And George Bush has decided that if he can borrow 650 men from Warminster, then he can free up more US Marines and he can launch an assault on the insurgent stronghold of Fallujah. And Tony Blair gave some justification in the Commons for why it was important that there are 138,000 US soldiers in Iraq, but apparently they haven't got any in reserve who are suitable to reinforce Baghdad, because rather bizarrely he said they're the wrong kind of soldiers. Which made me worry rather that maybe the US military effort was being administered by rail track. But then even more bizarrely, for someone with such fantastic political antennae as Tony Blair, you know, he just had a bit of a slip, because he said that our troops would be home by Christmas. And then he said that the deployment would bring peace in our time. And that it was a titanic effort.
Somehow the Americans are all beastly and go around bombing and shooting, whereas ours sort of make homemade scones and pass them out.
There was an extraordinarily good programme on BBC Two last night. I think it was called The Power of Nightmares, which traced the similarity between the Islamic fundamentalist terror groupings and the neoconservatives who basically run the US government. It made you realise just how much George Bush and Osama bin Laden need each other. They're like an abusive marriage. You know, they're just staying together for the sake of the war now. And I watched this and I thought, in the war on terror, why has nobody suggested counselling? It's never one, you know, they could be in a room with a group of like-minded people. He could get up, say, hello, I'm Osama bin Laden, I'm addicted to terror. I think I might be a rather controlling person. And that could... It's never been tried, has it?
2 points. The decision to redeploy the Black Watch into central Iraq to relieve American troops has caused controversy this week. Critics claim the decision was made on a political rather than a military basis. Jeff Hoon's insistence that the deployment of British troops will last for weeks rather than months hasn't reassured any of us who remember exactly the same being said about Countdown. Dave, which spectator found himself in the limelight this week?
Well, this has to be Boris Johnson, who didn't write an article criticising Liverpool, but has gone to Liverpool to apologise for editing a magazine containing an article criticising Liverpool, and misjudged his apology by starting it with, calm down, calm down. I believe. Yeah, no, so he sort of, he went to Liverpool to not meet the people, mm-hmm. essentially, and, yeah. and spent the whole day running around trying not to encounter any Liverpudlians.
Yes.
He could be the fifth Beatle, Boris Johnson, couldn't he?
And I wonder how many copies of The Spectator normally sell in Liverpool. How many Liverpudlians are in five-piece tweed suits with green carnations and stout brogues?
Oh, most of them, yes. Yeah, nick them off passing Spectator editors.
Most people must have been thinking, can't Billy Connolly come and apologise? At least we've heard of him. Boris is scary. He's done this programme, and he is a lovable mucktop. But he's just got this thing going on where he just goes, and yet you know he would have absolutely no hesitation in corralling you into a football stadium and shooting you.
Yes, Conservative MP, editor of The Spectator, Boris Johnson, has apologised to Liverpudlians after a leader in his magazine accused them of being too sentimental. He was advised by the police not to attempt to walk about, but ignored them, and was later found abandoned, propped up on two piles of bricks.
His problem really is that Liverpool is the one place you can't ever walk alone.
Jeremy, who claims we'd still be in the black, even though we can put it all on red 24 hours a day?
Oh, this is weird. George Bush has demanded that Blair move some of our gamblers into the Blackpool Triangle. because he's only got Nirvana is where you get to following the Eightfold Path, which is a path with eight folds in it, which would be stairs, in fact. But anyway, Nevada is the only gambling bit of America, and so Bush has pressurised Blair into turning our country into a nation of gamblers. But they're going to take slot machines away from places where children congregate. But children aren't that known as being gambling addicts. They run out of cash and then they go back to school. But the fact that their parents have lost their house is rather more important. So we'll all be able to gamble for 24 hours, but our children won't be able to.
Because it's the only way to keep pensioners working till they're 90. I'm surprised you didn't see that, because they both come out of 11 Downing Street.
We're all going to have to be gamblers.
We already are, because in the tables they produce, Britain in Western Europe is now the leading gambler, which I had a fiver on, and I'm delighted by it.
This week, the government's published a bill introducing sweeping reforms for gambling. The bill will have unlicensed fruit machines removed from fast food premises, but this is only because the people who go to fast food premises have no idea what fruit is. Alan, listen to this. Hey, Big Bender!
A little time with me.
Yeah. Alan, why have MPs been called to account?
It's really about MPs' expenses. And they're punched into a computer, which is not where I would want to punch them. They have a conclusion has been arrived at that they have £119,000 expenses each. It's impossible to quantify any of this. I don't know what they spend, but presumably they're very, very closely audited, so it doesn't really matter. We want to make jokes here about their profligacy and their money they spend and the drops that they take, but they don't really. The worst thing about our MPs is they are dreary, unimaginative people who don't know corruption when it's staring them in the face. But there was this report by, I must remember the man's name. Who is it?
That bloke, yes.
Rawlinson or Tom.
It's Archie something.
Sir Archie.
Archer. Archer. That's Archie. It was Archer. Archer has been asked to look into dodgy expenses of MPs. I'd forgotten him in the great list. He really was a serious crook. I admire him hugely.
Thursday saw the publication of allowances and expenses claimed by MPs being made public for the very first time. Many MPs use their expenses to employ their spouses as personal assistants. On the upside, this keeps more money in the family. On the downside, it does take all the fun out of having an affair with your secretary. So, at the end of round one, everybody has 4 points. And we start round two with a church bulletin seen in Hill Tidings Parish Newsletter.
Scouts are saving aluminium cans, bottles and other items to be recycled. Proceeds will be used to cripple children.
Thanks to Sue Fleetwood of Doddington for that. Andy, if the question is, what's big, leathery and never forgets, why could the answer soon be a handbag? Haven't got it?
No, I like your Edith Evans impression, though. That was...
It wasn't meant to be her. Sorry.
They're going to turn elephants into handbags?
No.
Oh, no, no, no. It's the smart fabrics.
Yes.
They're building little computer chips into fabric. So you can have, like, a handbag, and as you pick it up to go, it says, oh, you've forgotten your mobile phone, or you've forgotten your wallet, or whatever.
Oh.
But you haven't got one that says, you've forgotten your bag.
How annoying is that going to be? That's going to be, like, being married twice. That is... And do they really think that people are going to want a smart-ass handbag? I have to say, it was a beautifully constructed clue, Son. It wasn't the clue's fault that they didn't get that. It was my ignorance. But don't deduct any points or I'll chin you.
Next week you can come wearing a special coat that will know the answer.
Yeah, yeah. That would be brilliant.
It'd be good to have stairs where there was a little voice that said, you have forgotten why you came up me.
And rooms that say, you have decorated me the wrong colour.
Engineers at MIT have developed a system of smart fabrics which could lead one day to handbags that warn you if you're about to forget your umbrella or wallet, and scarves that detect pollution levels. Members of the team claim they've already created a baseball cap smarter than a human being, but only if that human being is David Beckham. Dave, listen to this.
Hey, fatty boom boom, let me tell you something. I say not because you're so big and fat. Don't believe I'm afraid of that. Self-praise is no recommendation. I'm the king from creation. Hey, fatty boom boom.
Dave, why should you be worried about heavy petting?
Oh, right, fine. 8 out of 10 vets say that they're seeing more and more obese pets, cats and dogs. I actually asked my dog about this yesterday.
What did he say?
Nothing, he's a dog.
Did you think Simon would walk into that or not?
It's my job to
walk
into
it. I did and I was right. for some reason, I understand it with dogs, because you can not walk a dog and you can feed it too much, but cats do their own thing, and apparently half of horses are now overweight as well. And it all seems a bit strange to me. But that it's basically there are obese pets out there.
Mm-hmm. Half a horse is overweight.
Only in Pantoland are half horses overweight. No, half of horses. Imagine two horses. One of them is overweight.
No, that's not possible.
Be the one I've backed.
You don't see a fat horse, though, do you?
You don't have fat horses. I'm
only telling you what the story told me, which is that 8 out of 10 vets are seeing more and more obese pets, and even half of horses they see are now overweight.
Surely a lot of dog obesity is down to the fact that there is a kind of dog owner that carries their dog around. Well, as you see it. I mean, usually the smaller... Our Pekingese, a lot of them overweight.
Don't know. Who cares?
You see fat cats, but mostly running Jarvis. Why do cats get singled out for that comparison, though? It's not fair, is it? You don't describe Jarvis as being run by fat horses, do you?
No, but it's about cream and smugness and grins and licking their own arses and that.
Dogs mostly lick their genitals.
Well, they've got class, haven't they?
Yeah.
Vets have reported an alarming increase in the number of overweight cats and dogs. On the bright side, the fire brigade can spend more time dealing with fires, as most cats are now too overweight even to think about climbing a tree. Alan, why could the British government be cruising for a boozing?
Sometimes when you've been doing this thing for 130 years, there are certain words that sort of stick around about your adenoids and don't get to the front of the face to fall out into the microphone, like European court. I mean, this is the Euro court wish to take HM, Customs and Excise. They want to haul them before the magistrates in whatever godforsaken town these people are. In The Hague or somewhere, because Her Majesty's Customs and Excise are stopping people in transit vans who are carrying 14,000 gallons of iron brew and vodka for their own consumption. All you have to do is look at them to see it's for their own consumption. claiming that they're flogging it, and the customs excise then take their cars away. I don't know why, but apparently if you go to Ashford or Dover, there are thousands and thousands of white vans that belong to these drunks. It's an extraordinary trade. The Belgians sell them vast amounts of beer, which come across on these catamarans, and in exchange for that, the customs and excise take their vans. It's a very curious piece of free marketing, which my capitalist friend on the right probably understands better than I. Does any of this stuff ever get to Catford?
What, the programme, you mean?
No, do they drink... Do they ever smoke or drink anything they get, or is it all in these vans, in car pounds, in Dover?
It's all impounded by customs and excise, who still wear tri-cornered hats and spend years looking in caves in the West Country for rum.
The European Commission is to take action against the government over booze cruises, claiming that customs officers impose disproportionate punishments on consumers. It's not the first problem the EU has had with British customs. They've already been completely thrown by cheese rolling, whale dressing and maypole dancing. 2 points there. And at the end of round two, thanks to my unique scoring system, Jeremy and Alan have 8, but Andy and Dave are just ahead with 9 points. Before we start the final round, here's an item seen on some Tesco packaging.
Tesco's Christmas mince pies. Best before 8th of November.
Thanks to Richard Armistead of Bognor Regis for that. Andy, listen to this. Andy, where will the highest bidder be going to the Chapel of Love?
eBay. Yes.
It is.
eBay. What was the question? That's how good we are in this team. We can we work from that end.
Why will the highest bidder be going to the Chapel of Love?
Well, it's to do with eBay. I know that.
Can you fill us in at all, Dave?
There's some guy who's been invited to a wedding and he doesn't actually like the groom and he certifiably hates the bride. And other people's weddings are quite dreary if you know them, but they're probably fabulously entertaining if you don't know them. And so he's put the wedding invitation on eBay, saying all sorts of disparaging remarks about how, don't worry, yes, the groom will probably sing karaoke, and yes, there'll be some fat women dancing, but it's worth at least 150 quid's worth of entertainment with all the food and the drink you'll get, and somebody's bid up to £10 million for it so far. Although I think that might be a prank bid.
That'll be the Canadians again, they're so... after they bought those submarines.
In fact, he's had a thing where some other people have got in touch with him since and said, oh, I don't want to go either, you can have my tickets if you like. So he's increased what's for sale to 5 tickets. And I think maybe we should all go.
Yeah.
A man in Aberdeen is selling an unwanted invitation to a friend's wedding on eBay and has attracted bids of up to £10 million. Surely auctioning off your attendance at a wedding is the wimp's way out. It's much more manly to tell your bride-to-be that she has fat ankles and cop off with the head bridesmaid. Dave, who says chav is the word on the street?
Oh, Susie Dent, her off of Countdown, says it. She's written a book. Susie Dent, whose name is probably an amusing anagram if you work it out. I haven't. but it should be. I've got nudist already. There you go, see nudist. There you go, it works. She's written a book which sort of charts the rise of new words in the English language, and the current one is chav, which is your Burberry baseball cap, gold signet ring wearing lad and single mum in sports gear in your shopping centre, mm-hmm. Kind of thing. And she says that the origin of the word is probably from Romany, where chavvy is child or something along those lines, although it might also mean council housed and violent. But it was a good excuse for all the newspapers to go through with all those other words that used to exist and when they arrived. Apparently sex was invented in 1929, which makes you wonder where very old people came from.
I think Jimmy Savile invented hip-hop. Because you look at him, it's all tracksuits and jewellery, isn't it? With my hoe there in the hood. Fabulous, fabulous.
The word chav is allegedly the buzzword for 2004, joining a list of buzzwords going back to 1904, compiled by the OUP. Chavs are also known as Neds, Kevs, Charvers, Bazzers, and Rat Boys, but mainly just as Wayne. Lots of chav jokes. How, what do you call a chav in a filing cabinet? Sorted. What do you call a chav in a box with a lock on it? Safe. Why is a chav like a slinky? It's absolutely useless, but it's great fun to watch it fall downstairs. Jeremy, who's poo-pooing a sticky point?
A.A. Milne, who wrote Winnie the Pooh, he invented this game when he was out with his young researcher in this wood, and they used to drop sticks off of a bridge and then rush to the other side and see which stick came out first. And somebody has entirely ruined this rather charming game. It's about the only game that does involve a bridge, apart from bridge. But, and somebody has scientifically proved how to win it, and there's a flawless way that you win it, which is to drop your stick onto a passing speedboat. So it's all spoiled now, because it used to be a harmless way of, you know, you'd take Boris Johnson out and you'd say, here's something, Boris, you'll be able to do this. And drop the stick in the water. And he'd say, just drop the stick in the water and then we'll go to the other side and watch the stick come through. Okay. And, but it's all been ruined now. All the mystery and magic's been taken out of it now.
Author Ben Schott controversially claims in his new book it's possible to cheat when you play the innocent game of poo sticks. Poo sticks has lots of famous fans, though the first time David Beckham was told to throw a stick into the stream, Posh nearly drowned. Alan, how's the Trabant and Strife?
There is an extremely sad man called Graham, and he has dedicated his life to collecting Trabants. These are those tin boxes that the East Germans broke down the wall for because they could stand nothing or take any kind of depredation except being given this Trabant. It only had five moving parts and none of them ever did. Anyway, this bloke has collected 49 of them, hoping to cash in on a Trabant market in the future. And he's now cornered all the Trabants in the world and he's got them in a field somewhere in the north of England. And his neighbours don't like looking out at these things, which really look like Romanian biscuit tins, is a big thing, and he's been asked to move them, but of course he can't, because the rubber bands have rotted by now, the keys are wedged in the clockwork, and there's some injunction on behalf of one of those councils that, it's Cumbria, is it Cumbria? Tell us, Simon.
Peak District, no, Derbyshire.
Peak, well, it's the same thing. I mean, it's somewhere north of Edgware, this man has 49 Trabants that nobody wants, and they don't know what to do with them because they can't move them and they can't melt them down because, you know, they're just rusted away.
The world's largest private collection of Trabant cars.
When you say the world's largest private collection of Trabants, are there public collections
thousands.
Of Trabants? Because I haven't seen signs saying this way to the Trabant Museum.
The world's largest private collection of Trabant cars is facing the crusher after a court ordered the rusting wrecks to be removed from the Peak District National Park. The heap of rusting cars can be seen from the nearby public footpath, giving people in the country some idea of what it's like to live in London. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Well, this is from Paddy Dobbs from the Sheffield Star, and I was interested in it. I think it's one of those puzzling decision type cuttings. And it says, a phone link to the Samaritans has been set up at the bottom of cliffs at a notorious suicide spot.
Horse, cart, horse.
If the fall doesn't kill you, you can always hang yourself with a flex, I suppose.
Steve.
This comes from Mike Beeson, and it's actually from a BBC website. It's a report on a royal visit to South Devon. And it says, after his address, the prince stepped on board the trawler, Margaret of Ladrum, based in Brixham, South Devon. He examined special nets designed to allow smaller fish to escape before being taken on a tour of the boat.
Which is lovely.
Jeremy.
Sent in by Sheila Fales from Glasgow, and it's from the Sunday Times. Struan Stevenson, the boisterous Tory MEP, has travelled to every corner of Scotland in recent weeks in his bid to be re-elected to the Brussels gravy train. Last week, while touring the small rural communities of the West Coast, he popped into a busy tea room for sustenance and the chance to excite the customers on the perils and pitfalls of qualified majority voting. As he approached the counter, the jolly man address exclaimed, "You get your tea for half price." The delighted Stevenson explained that it wasn't often that he was recognised by members of the public, but it was nice to know that the message was getting through. "What do you mean?" said the tea lady. "I thought you were the coach driver."
I'll have this one from the Hendon Times. A woman who stole two mobile phones from the Brent Cross branch of Dixon's told Hendon magistrates that one of them was a present for her probation officer. Let's look at the final score. Jeremy and Alan have 12. Andy and Dave have clung to their lead and are winners with 13 points. And before we leave you, here's an item from The Guardian.
Two people nearly killed when a furious Romanian football fan threw his television set out of the window refused to help police press charges. Neighbour Radu Demerju said, "At first I was shocked at my neighbour. He could have killed us. But when he told me he'd been watching the football, I completely understood."
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Dave Gorman, Jeremy Hardy and Alan Coyne. The chairman was Simon Hoggett and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chairman's script was written by George Poles, Lucy Clark and Simon Littlefield. The panellists' panels were supplied by Tony Spooner and the producer was Simon Nichols.